In October 2020, two brothers began recording a podcast about the horror movies they love. All things seemed successful till they vanished in March of 2021. Now they have returned, the same, yet somehow different. You're listening to Horror Brothers.
Everybody, welcome back to Horror Bros. I'm your host Jason Johnson, along with
JT Johnson. How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Doing great. It's fucking Oppenheimer weekend. I'm happier than pigging shit. If Cillian Murphy does not get a Best Actor Oscar, then it's all bullshit. It's not even that movie is so fucking good.
I'm watching it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it. I don't know if he succeeds at creating the atomic bomb.
Yeah. It's a nail biter.
Yeah. We're going to go watch, as of this recording, we're recording on Saturday, the 21st. Yeah. I'm going to go watch Barbie in the morning at 9 o'clock and then watch our Cyport has an IMAX. We're going to go watch Oppenheimer at 3 o'clock tomorrow. So
cool. Cool. Well, prepare to be just amazed. It's so good. It is so good.
But all right. Yeah. Jason?
Yeah.
I got some breaking horror news, man, from the past week.
Yeah.
So this past week, they released new posters, Universal and Blumhouse did, for The Exorcist Believer.
Yep.
There are character posters. There's also a synopsis. The synopsis read that actor Leslie Odom plays the father of a possessed child. In his desperation for answers, he seeks out Ellen Burstyn's Chris McNeil, a woman who had a similar encounter decades ago, set to be released October 13th. Also released this week was a first look and synopsis for Saw 10. The first look that I could see seemed to be just Tobin Bell back as Jigsaw.
Mm-hmm.
The release date has been moved up from October. It's supposed to come out in October. It's coming out September 29th. The new movie is set between Saw and Saw 2. And sees Jigsaw heading to Mexico in search for a miracle cure. And when he discovers that it's all a big old scam, he plays his deadly game with those that are scamming people.
Oh, shit.
That's the plot line. They're going back to basics, man.
Yeah.
Now, here's my opinion of these two things. Saw 10, sure, fine. You know, that's been a long-running series.
Yeah.
I don't really have an opinion. The Exorcist Believer, though, I do have some thoughts. There's a little bit of, dare I say, pun intended, faith in those movies.
Yeah.
Are the upcoming movie, which is supposed to be the start of a trilogy because it's from director right. David Gordon Green and Danny McBride, who just did Halloween.
Right.
That latest Halloween trilogy. Unlike Halloween, though, this is a bigger hurdle. This is a direct sequel to The Exorcist.
Right.
Which the track record has been one good sequel that still has its own set of problems. The Exorcist 3, starring George C. Scott.
Yep.
And
he's George C. Scottiest.
Yes. It is not. In the file. One of my favorite. And we just actually, Courtney and I just watched The Changeling from 1980, which is a really good thing. Although, a slow burn from hell, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It picks up when it becomes a horror mystery, when he's trying to figure out what's going on with his house. But anyway. But beyond The Exorcist 3, every sequel or two prequels to The Exorcist has sucked.
Yeah.
And I think that's because the challenge is you're trying to make a direct sequel to a film that is not just one of the best horror films ever made. It's one of the greatest films ever made.
Right.
And I have faith for Green to do something original with it. So I definitely can't wait for, again, October 13th. For this first, what's supposed to be first of three films. It's from Blumhouse. Universal acquired the rights, I guess, to distribute, previous films being distributed by Warner Brothers. And this film's at least coming out because they finished production before the strikes. Which once again, studios, please pay your fucking people.
Yeah. Just pony up the fucking money out of all these billions you make and fucking get back to work.
Let's get this going. But I have faith in the Exorcist believer, but again, I'm going to go in with it's a cautious optimism because it seems to be hard.
Since I watched Oppenheimer this morning, I happen to have seen the trailer for Exorcist believer.
It was supposed to come out soon. Was it with? It's with Oppenheimer.
It's with Oppenheimer. And
see, I'm going to have to watch it when we get off the air here because we won't have any trailers at the sideboard.
Okay. Well, I tell you, we went and looked for it yesterday because Dylan wanted to show it to me, and it was not out on any of the streamers yet, like YouTube or anything like that yet. It's only showing before Oppenheimer, but that should be out within a few days. But I'll say this much. It is going to be, from the looks of the trailer, it is going to be heavy on I'm the devil, you know, type shit, you know, this time it's two little girls that are both possessed by the same demon, I guess. I don't know. And
okay, see, that explains something to me. There were two character posters, but the character posters was the two possessed children.
Yeah.
But the synopsis said Leslie Odom Jr. is the father of a possessed child. So I was like, what the hell?
I got to look at one
of the character posters, and I thought, are they going to recast Reagan? And I was like, and this is like a flashback or something. But again, I had not seen the trailer, so you just clarified that.
Oh, actually. I don't know. I'm like you. I can tell you that the overall thing on the YouTubes, as these kids call it today, is that people are like, this trailer looks like shit. But I've learned not to go through that and judge people, take other people's opinions on things. I'm with you. I'll put it as cautiously optimistic that they may have actually done it this time. And it's in the hands of a good team. It's a team that took Halloween and said, hey, they made all these fucking sequels, and quite frankly, they suck. We're going to make definitive sequels to this, and we're going to end it. So that's what I'm hoping they do with The Exorcist. I'm hoping they just go, yep, this is, you know, we're going to make the definitive sequels to this great movie. But you are right. It's easy to kind of jump into a horror film that has... You have a built-in kind of thing with nostalgia and stuff there, you know, with a main boogeyman character and all. With that, you don't get that because it is just, in the end, a film about a possession. There is no horror boogeyman that you can bring up like Michael Myers or something. I don't know. It's going to be difficult, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's just one of those things where, like, I'm almost beginning to wonder that there are two untouchable horror films, that you shouldn't really make a sequel to, one being The Exorcist, because it's the Oscar-nominated right. horror film. You know, it was one of the first ones to get that kind of recognition. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, man. I swear to God.
Yeah, they just keep fucking that up.
They seem to be sequels that, this long stream of sequels just don't work for those two. But, well, Jason, last week we went with my movie first.
Yeah.
I want to go with your movie first this week, because this is a movie that you and I both were new to.
Right.
In terms of, we've got to watch it. I watched it the very next day after we recorded last week, in fact.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk about this movie. So I'm going to give it to you to get us going today.
Well, the movie I watched was Pearl. Pearl, I know we talked about it last week a little bit, because I watched X for my movie last week. And Pearl is the sequel to, or prequel. It tells the story of the... kind of the origin story of the bad guy from the big bad from X, which is Pearl. Basically, it's she's trapped on her family's farm. Pearl, she tends to her father because he's ailing. I mean, he's infirm, basically. And then she has this mother that is just constantly yelling at her that, you know, you better get used to life sucking. And so she wants to go out and be a dancer in the movies. And but so we watch her attempt that, but we also watch as this whole thing, you know, with her family and this guy that comes into it goes downhill. We watch a descent into madness, and I thought it was done great. Now, the movie stars Mia Goth, of course, as Pearl. David Cornsweet as the projectionist. Tandy Wright as her mother. And Matthew Sutherland as father. And Emma Jenkins Puro as Mitzi, her sister-in-law. And Alistair Sewell as Howard. Of course, written and directed by Ty West. Also, another writing credit, Mia Goth actually wrote on this movie. I love this movie. And now, is it a slow burn? Yes, it is, but it is supposed to be. It is supposed to show you how just the drudgery of the daily life in 1918 during the Spanish flu and World War One, and you're living on this farm and you want something more, but you just can't get it. And then it shows her, it's just, like I say, it's a slow descent into madness to get there, you know, to get to, but once you get there, holy shit, it takes off pretty quick.
Yes, but dare I say, not as much of a slow burn as X was. Like, Courtney and I watched it with my roommate, Courtney, and we both agreed this movie gets going a lot quicker. And I think the what helps with that is, what I love about Pearl is that her psychosis doesn't just happen because she can't get off the farm.
Right.
That sets it off.
Yeah.
But, like, right at the beginning of the movie, oh, look, a duck. And she kills the duck and feeds it to an alligator. So we know something in the back of her head is wrong.
Right.
And, oh, and her husband, Howard, from the first movie, is off to war.
Right.
He's off in World War One. And then, she wants to escape. She hates what she's in. And that's the guiding force for a madness that is really already there. Like, at first, I think we're set to hate the mother because it seems like the mother just hates her. But as it's revealed in the movie, like, she knows that Pearl has a darkness to her. That's part of what her problem is. You're led to believe that she's just pissed because she has an ailing husband.
Right. Well, she's got an ailing husband, and I think there's a little bit you start thinking that she's jealous of her daughter, because her daughter, you know, is still young and could still have. But then, yes, you start to realize that no, not at all. She's not jealous of her daughter. She's afraid of her daughter because she realizes that girl has something fucking wrong with her.
And it could also be that her mother is slightly jealous, because that kind of it's kind of Pearl's guiding force in X, is that she's jealous of the youth of Maxine, also played by Goth, and the other people that she's with in X.
Them Bohemians.
What I loved about this movie,
she's jealous of them Bohemians.
Yeah. What I loved about this movie too is West, who, yes, he developed it with Mia Goth really as background for her character when she played it in X. And then due to the pandemic, it's not a coincidence. He said it during the Spanish flu. You see people in masks and isolated, and there's people pissed off about that. And, but they developed it during production of X. And like you said last week, A24 said, make this movie. We'll green light this movie. I just realized I was sounding a little bit like Eugene Levy. I've been watching a lot of Schitt's Creek this week. We'll make this movie, David. Sorry. But yeah, and she wants to escape, which I mean, hell, like growing up in a small town and wanting to escape something bigger. Is there any way we could relate to this movie anymore, Jason?
No, I don't know. Is it?
But what I also loved, he did not repeat the tone of X. X is this tribute to 1970s Texas Chainsaw Massacre films. This is a tribute to golden age of films.
Yes, it is.
And the emerging of sort of horror films, or in this case, also pornography, because she is introduced to a projectionist, a charming projectionist, who everybody's going to be making these. He shows her an illegal underground film, which is just a porn film from underground.
Yeah,
he said this is one day going to be the next biggest thing, kind of situation. Oh, by the way, that actor. You will see him soon. He's going to be in James Gunn's Superman Legacy as Superman Clark Kent. He was cast recently.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, watching his role in here, I'm like, I see why they got him.
Yeah.
Because he kind of had a charming old school Superman vibe to him. I was like, I could see it, even though this was totally not that character. But yeah, when she realizes she's kind of subjected to her fate of where she's supposed to be, get out of the way, because Pearl will kill you in multiple ways. it's one of those things where I will say this about this movie, unlike X, if Mia Goth's performance does not work, this movie does not work.
Yeah. Yeah. She nailed it. She fucking nailed it. In fact, there at the very end of the movie, and as the credits go and it fades out on her slowly, that 3.5 minute smile she does, it's amazing. She's just smiling. It's the creepiest shit ever. They filmed it. They actually filmed it. One shot, and I mean, there's a tear that comes down. He was wanting to just do she smiles and they freeze frame, but thank God they didn't. They got one of the creepiest little ends to a fucking movie you'll ever see.
Well, not only is she smiling, as it goes, the smile gets cut slightly wider and wider and wider, and it's like the strain of the smile makes her cry, along with the emotional impact that she is doing something her mother says, which is accept what you have.
Yeah.
And she does. She's trying to, but God, the pain of not wanting to—you can see it on her face. It's fantastic.
Well, and what gets me about this movie too is the little things like that, because like in the movie, she finally goes nuts. She does the kills, but the creepiest part of the fucking movie and the climax of the movie is an 8-minute monologue she gives. And she does it so well. She's just sitting at the table talking to her sister-in-law, and she does this monologue, And man alive, is it just creepy, and it just sums up perfectly the movie and the point, you know. And oh, it was so good. So good.
And makes you feel bad for this psycho. She's fucking psychotic, but yet you feel for her. You feel for her situation. And I love it because afterwards, or actually during the movie, my roommate Courtney, he actually said at first, he said, this feels like a weird Wizard of Oz movie. And after he said that, and after the movie, of course, I did research because I knew we were going to do the show. Sure enough, Ty West said, yes, I want to make a demented Mary Poppins / Wizard of Oz, a demented Disney movie is what he wanted to make. And boy, howdy did he.
Yes, he did. So- and I'll tell you, it's crazy here. There's some little things in there, too, that people don't notice, or they either put the wrong thing on. A lot of people think that it is a fuck-up, an anachronism in the movie when she goes to see the movie, and it has sound, because it's set in 1918, and the first feature-length film with sound, an actual soundtrack, didn't come until 1926.
Yeah, the jazz singer. Yeah.
Right, but that wasn't it at all. What it was them saying, no, this is a silent film she's watching. That's in her head. She's imagining, her psychosis has this music happening in her head, kind of like later on in the movie when she goes to audition to be a dancer, and this whole musical number happens behind her with backup dancers and everything. It's all in her head.
I was going to say, yeah, that, like, I recognized that when it happened.
Yeah.
When she's watching the silent film, that, like, there was sound. And I was like, okay, that's weird. But to your point, that was rectified for me when she has her audition.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I see what they were doing there. Yeah. It's not quite as clearly explained in the movie, so I do understand why some people are saying that.
Yeah, but I get why people get it wrong. It's understand completely, but there is another thing that happened here that people took as a it's such a small one, but people actually kind of made a little bit of a big deal out of it, but it wasn't really. As she is going through town on her bike, when we first see her go to town for the first time, you'll notice everyone has masks on for the Spanish flu, which people, they weren't making a fucking point during the Spanish flu. There are pictures. People did wear masks, so chill the fuck out.
I think that was the point. Look, yeah. We had to do this before.
We actually considered it our civic duty to do this shit before. But here's an interesting thing in the movie. She is not wearing a mask. And a lot of people thought that they were trying to make some fucking statement that, oh, look, the psycho in the movie's not wearing a mask. People who don't want to wear a mask must be psychos. That wasn't it at all. Again, if you'll notice in the movie, her mother is deathly afraid of catching the Spanish flu and dying. Pearl wants her mother to die so badly that she is willing to go into town, contract Spanish flu, and take it back to her mother, risking her life as well as her mother's. It's little things like that. And it's also her kind of fuck you to her mother, you know, because she does want out. She don't want to do a goddamn thing, her mom says, because, you know, her mom just wants her to live her life. There's little things like that in there. Some people have taken them wrong and or not wrong, but just made their own interpretations out of them. But
hey, see, that's the thing. I didn't even make that interpretation. I just made it the interpretation of, she was supposed to go into town to do something very specific. Go here, get your dad's medicine, get back home. And instead, when she gets there, kind of like a defiant young person towards their parents, in her need to escape, she's like, I'm just going to sneak off to the movies here real quick.
Right.
And watch one of these talkies. That's how I interpreted that. People, I swear, they want to look for any sort of quote unquote wokeness.
Well, everything's got to be politicized today.
And by the way, I have no problem with being woke. I'm talking quote unquote woke. I've got to find something in everything.
Right.
I got a bitch. I just listened to the latest podcast on the left, and Patton Oswalt was on there. And he said, I'm waiting for the next group of people to fight for their rights. These people who, hey, I've got a right to bitch about things. It's a disorder. Because he's like, the one thing he's learned over the years, thanks to the internet, is there's people who just want to bitch about things and want to find something to bitch about.
Yep.
And it's also not helped that it's fueled by this dipshit Ben Shapiro. He just tweeted out, my producers forced me to go watch Barbie. We'll talk about this piece of garbage later. So I can't wait to see his fucking opinion.
Yeah.
That I won't actually see because I don't give a shit about Ben fucking Shapiro.
Yeah, so. I've been very lucky the last few years I've gotten away from all the bullshit pundits and all that shit, and it's been the best thing I ever did.
What was sad about it is the only reason I saw it, my roommate Courtney's on Twitter, so he saw it. The only reason anyone's gonna see that shit is because he's looking for the clicks. He don't give a fuck about the Barbie movie.
Yeah, nobody.
He just knows it's the biggest thing this fucking weekend, and
yeah, none
it's
of those
the biggest
people,
feminist thing happening, so he can bitch about it.
Well, none of those people give a shit about anything. They just want clicks. It's the ultimate troll, you know. They're trolls. But anyway, enough of that stuff. This movie is fantastic. I absolutely love it, and I love Mia Goth. I love Mia Goth.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see Maxine, because I tell you, if West has said he has different ideas with each film in this series. He's going to explore a different version of horror or different version of film, era of film. I'm like, West, if you got the ideas, do it. Because dare I say, Jason, I love X.
Yeah.
I love Pearl more.
Yeah.
Like, I actually liked Pearl more than I did X.
Yeah.
And so I'm down for it. West, keep building your universe, because it's a great universe to live in.
Amen.
For an hour and a half.
They've got the little clip out from Maxine. Well, it's not a clip from the movie. It's just a coming soon thing. But from the looks of that, it's going to be very 80s themed. He's going to stick with this theme of whenever the movie has occurred, that's, you know, whatever time frame, I'm going to go with the theme from that era.
And it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to have like the emergence of the video.
Right. It's VHS kind of area. Yeah.
And like I said last week, it looks like Giancarlo Esposito, best friend from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And the legendary Kevin Bacon will be in the movie as well.
Well,
so,
and that is,
in, I mean,
to me, that is a testament to how good X and Pearl both were. Because when you get into the casting on it, they definitely got a few more A-listers for this one, you know, come for Maxine. And I think that was just people looking at that like we are, saying, holy shit, I'm digging this universe they're building. I want to be a part of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, yeah. You've got actual actors who want to be, and we may actually see that one sooner than everything, because there's been an update to the actor strike, and I think the writer's strike has agreed to it. Small independent studios such as A24 have been granted permission to finish the movies that they're working on currently.
Yeah.
Because that their fight is not with the small studios, it's with the big studios.
Yeah.
And so if you do see some actors out there actually acting, they're not defying the strike. They got a permission or a waiver to go ahead and finish whatever they were currently working on when the strike started.
Right.
And I know Maxine had already started filming in April, so I imagine they'll let that film go ahead and finish up. And this is actually good news, because that means when the studio films dry up, if this strike lasts long enough, we got a new independent wave of movies coming.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to lead to what we've said. Jason, you and I have discussed this. We've been expecting a new indie wave, the likes of the 90s, to really hit at some point. It feels like the powder keg was out there. I think this will be the powder keg exploding if they get to that point. And the only thing that we can release in theaters is independent films that got waivers to go ahead and make their movies.
Right.
And if they're as good as Pearl, and they're as good as X, or they're as good as any of the other A24 films or Blumhouse films or any of those, we're going to get some good independent low budget movies out there.
Right.
So I think we're going to get some good content. While the actors and writers rightfully fight for what they're fighting for. And I want to just make note of this too, to anyone who would listen to this, that may be thinking about, in particular, I've been seeing this about the Actors Guild, is I've seen some people complain like, what are the actors complaining about? They make money. No, a handful of movie stars
make money. Yeah.
This isn't about them.
Yeah.
They're trying to fight along with the other actors for those actors that are your background actors, your extra actors, the ones who depend on residual pay,
right,
which is a big topic with streamers. They depend on that for their livelihoods. In fact, it just came out of one of my favorite shows growing up as a kid was, of course, as you know, Jason, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
The actor who played Zordon, the big head in the tube that instructed the Power Rangers, that was, at first I thought that was just an actor in the original Japanese series that they just dubbed over because he just makes these minimal movements with his mouth and they just put it whatever. No. That was an American actor that they put in a green, like they put this green stuff on him and all around his face so they could just capture his face with some expressions. He got paid $150 for one day's work. Never saw another dime from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was a day's work for $150. He never got residual deals or anything like that. Yeah. And that's the kind of stories that are emerging. That's why actors are fighting for more say in the pay and the residuals and all that. It's not Tom Cruise who makes 20. Tom Cruise is supporting the actors that are behind him in those Mission Impossible movies.
Right. And so, and listen, you know, they're talking about the AI thing too, you know, and all that. The fact is, they've literally already started scanning extras' faces. They could literally just make extras one day and not need the actors. You know, the big actors, sure, they have their stuff, their likeness rights that they're selling off to companies, actually. There's a big company that's buying up a lot of them. But these young actors, the people who are extras and background and stuff like that right now, they don't have anyone fighting for them to make sure their likeness rights are held on to. And, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, it's not, like you say, it is big Hollywood actors supporting the little guy, the hundreds and hundreds of actors out there that don't have anyone fighting for them. Yeah. So
and don't get me wrong. I'll make my jokes. I posted on Facebook when the strike started. Don't worry, everybody. Jonah Hill will show up to the picket line soon to set up boundaries for the for the actors. But I definitely support the writers. I supported them for sure, but I also definitely support the actors as well. I do hope it gets resolved quickly. The selfish part of me wants that. There is a selfish part of me that, you know, I want my movies. But at the same time, don't give in to these studio assholes.
Well,
try to fight. I know they're going to try. The problem is I've heard that, like, the studios are going to try to wait them out my rent's due. Like, stuff like that. But,
well, this just blows my fucking mind on the writer's strike. Let's face facts. You don't have stories written, you don't make a movie. That's just it.
There's that.
And it just that, and, it, and then, it, but they are literally treated as the lowest rung on a fucking totem pole, you know.
And what's funny is Courtney told me like the other, I think just yesterday that he saw something where, like I said, if the producers gave in to the demands of what they're asking for, it would still be less than like a percentage of what they make. Like,
right.
It's ridiculous how easy it could be for them to just go, okay. Yeah. And fucking pay them, you know? And again, if the studios are fucking worried about paying their writers and their actors, don't make $300 million fucking movies. Try your best also to get out of the goddamn streaming business. Back up off that shit. Because as Netflix has proven time and time again, and I'm not talking about the recent stock slump, which was whoo, but Netflix has only shown quote unquote profits in 1 year. 1 year they were able to say, hey, we're out of the hole. They've been in debt since they were a streamer. And so get away from that. Stop making big budgeted movies at least at $300 million a pop. Start making micro budgeted movies as they're being referred to, and make some great content. We're ready for it. I mean, superhero fatigue. Oh, yeah. I love superhero films, but even superhero fatigue has affected me. Let's get away from superheroes for a while. Right. And or anything that would require big, huge budgets. And, you know, let this indie wave happen. I'm just ready for a new indie wave, man, the likes of which we haven't seen since the 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've talked about the strikes. But we did mention that Maxine is going to be set in the 80s, which signals that maybe I should go ahead and talk about my movie.
Yes.
For this week.
For sure.
We are rewinding the clock back to 1986. Writer and director Fred Dekker's Night of the Creeps. A summary for the film: After an alien unleashes a parasitic slugs on Earth in the 1950s, they are freed once again in the 1980s, and a group of college kids and a down-on-his-luck detective must do what they can to save the college and possibly the world. The movie stars Jason Lively as Chris Romero, Steve Marshall as J.C. Hooper, Jill Whitlow as, I forget her name in the movie. actually, she's the love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And the legendary Tom Atkins as Detective Cameron. And Jason Lively, the main kid in here, if that name sounds maybe vaguely familiar to Gen Xers, mm-hmm. he was Rusty in European Vacation.
Yep.
That was his big claim to fame. Jason, I saw this film for the first time, I want to say 2 Octobers ago.
Yeah.
And it went under my radar. I didn't even know it existed. Courtney had made a list of horror films to watch that October. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to watch your list in addition to my own list. And I saw Night of the Creeps. And so we throw this movie on. Jason, I had such a blast.
It's so much
with
fun.
This movie. So much so that the next day I got the fucking Blu-ray from Shout Factory. Shout Factory has a Blu-ray for it. And Fred Dekker, for those who don't know, his other cult film, his bigger cult film, is The Monster Squad, which actually, interestingly enough, got greenlit during the production for this movie. So there's a scene set in a public restroom with graffiti on the wall. And if you look on the wall, it says, one of the pieces of graffiti says, "The Monster Squad rules." He put that in because he had just gotten the green light for The Monster Squad.
Yeah.
So there's a little thing there. What I love about it is Jason Lively is great as Chris, the main character, but he's the everyman. He's the one we follow. So he's playing his role perfectly. Again, Jill Whitlow is in there as the love interest, and she does her part. Steve Marshall is Chris's like disabled. He has crutches, disabled friend, J.C. Hooper. Now, normally in a horror movie, the comedic relief is the most fucking annoying character in the movie.
Right.
The jokes are never fucking funny. I can't wait to see them fucking die. Case in point, Friday the 13th from 1980, where he's like, oh, there's no one messing around here, sir, when the officer is there. And it's like, dude, just fucking die. And then they fucking kill him off screen, which pisses me off. But I usually hate the comedic relief. Thankfully, they usually always die. I love his comedic relief. He's there for his boy. He's trying to get him laid. He's trying to hook him up with the girl. And he's there for him. Not all of his jokes succeed or anything like that, but he's just a really lovable character. And so I really care for him when he's in danger. So to Steve Marshall, I salute you, because, man, you make a role that's usually fucking thankless, and you make that role shine. The biggest role in this movie, though, is Detective Cameron, played by the legendary Tom Atkins. For those who may not know who he is, he's a guy that if he had broken the 70s, probably would have been a star. He has that kind of 70s main man look. But he came about in the 80s, really, with films like The Fog, and of course, his biggest claim to fame is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which we will talk about one day, because I fucking love that movie. He just has a blast with this role. He's a fucking slightly suicidal detective, because in the 1950s part of the movie, his girlfriend was brutally murdered. This movie jumps genres intentionally. Starts off as an alien sci-fi B-movie, a 50s B-movie, and then it's ultimately an 80s zombie movie, because when the slugs take you over, it turns you into a zombie. Atkins, he has a catchphrase in the movie. He says, "Thrill me," throughout the movie. And I actually have a shirt with his picture on it that says, "Thrill me," that Courtney got me as a stocking stuffer one Christmas. And he's just fucking fun. My favorite quote comes from him, and it's mostly due to his delivery. And it's the quote where he goes to the dorm, the sorority house, and he says to the ladies there, he says, "Girls, I got good news and bad news. Good news, your dates are here." One of the sorority sisters goes, "The bad news, they're dead."
Yeah.
I fucking love this movie. And Fred Decker said, like, it was supposed to be an intentional, like, I just threw every B-movie trope in the movie. Everything but the kitchen sink sort of feel. And, you know, in reading the summary, describing it here, what it's about, it should not work. It really shouldn't. There's so much stuff that it just shouldn't work. But because of the cast and because of Decker's really good direction, really, this movie is a fun, fun ride. And I wanted to choose a fun movie this week, because last week I chose Halloween Ends. I intentionally chose a movie that was kind of controversial with the fandom and stuff like that. Not this movie. This is a movie, pop your popcorn, sit back, and just have a blast with it. It's a great horror comedy.
Yeah. I hadn't seen this movie since I was a kid, but it was funny. I remembered Rusty being in it, and of course Tom Atkins, because he's just a mainstay, you know, of 80s horror.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so much fun. This was
Did
one of those movies.
Did you watch it again for this?
I was not able to catch it again this week. I was pretty busy this week, so. I managed to watch Pearl and go see Oppenheimer, but that's about all the movies I've got in this week. Excuse me. But the Decker being a fan of horror and, you know, making a horror movie, it's so funny because the names of these characters, you can just see what he did. And it's so, because you have Chris Romero. The JC's full name is James Carpenter Hooper. We have Cynthia Cronenberg.
Trying to figure out which one it was.
We have Ray Cameron, Detective Landis, Sergeant Ramey, and Mr. Miner. That's hilarious. They were all horror directors, famous horror directors.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you can tell this movie, it's fun. It's so much fun, but it was, you could tell it was made by someone who was not only a a director and somebody who wanted to make a movie. He's a fan of these movies and this, you know.
Yeah. And one more thing, there is a director's cut and the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
But the only reason I say watch the director's cut is because the only real significance is the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And the director's cut ending is just better.
Yeah.
The theatrical ending gives you your stereotypical "they're not gone" ending, like freeze frame scream,
right,
sort of ending. The director's cut, it gives you a "they're not gone" sort of ending, but it does it in a much funner way. And it kind of bookends how the movie starts, because this movie literally starts on a spaceship with little people in very obvious alien costumes.
Right.
As one of the aliens is trying to get a vial, which has the slugs in it,
right,
the creeps, if you will, and he's trying to get it off the ship. And you don't know why this alien is fighting the other aliens or why, but the vial ends up on Earth. It's just kind of the setup. Yeah. And what I love about it is Courtney and I started watching the movie, and right from the get-go, we were like, what the fuck are we watching?
Yeah.
And then it goes to black and white 1950s, and then a woman is about to get hacked up, and right as that's about to happen, boom, 1980s Rush.
Yeah.
On a college campus.
And so
you're jumping around a lot, and that's the part that I said shouldn't work, but somehow does.
It's the matter, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, Lively's character, he's running around with a fucking flamethrower, isn't he?
Yes, there's a scene where him and Detective Cameron go to the evidence locker, and there's the guy there that runs it is actually, I think his name is Dick Miller from the Gremlins Chopping Mall and Terminator. That's probably where most people would recognize him in Terminator. Dick Miller is the gun owner. Like, he owns the gun shop where the Terminator goes to get his guns. He's there, and Tom Atkins is like, "We're going to need that flamethrower." And they all start to laugh. He's like, "Oh, you serious? You need it? All right, where's your requisition forms?" And Tom Atkins puts up a shotgun right here. And Dick Miller's like, I'll go get that for you.
Yeah.
So,
but that's that 80s innocence thing, where we would go see a movie like this and just be like, all right, yeah, fuck it. Every police station has a fucking flamethrower in the back room, you know? Every fucking, like you say, it's not supposed to work, but it just did back then and even today. Any movie, like you said, any movie that I first look at and go, what the fuck is going on here? It's going to be a good night for me if I'm watching that movie, you know?
Yeah, more than likely, it's going to work. But
unless it's a racer head, and then I'm just depressed the rest of the night.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
I know, our original
Courtney,
run. I got you to watch that.
No. Courtney just watched it, and he had a similar reaction to me, which was, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
What the fuck? But I just realized something. Tom Atkins, if action fans are wondering who he is, he's also Murtaugh's best friend, whose daughter is murdered in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Tom Atkins is the guy that like seeks Murtaugh out and has one of the great over the top scenes where he's like, "You find them, and you kill them, kill them." Like,
oh yeah.
Atkins is great, man. Like, the three films that you got to watch with him is this movie, The Fog, and Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Like I said, this is a dude that, like, if he broke in the gritty 70s, he would have played like a gritty cop character, and probably would have been like a Death Wish, Charles Bronson-esque person. Like, he probably would have found that kind of movie to be in. Hattie Broke is a major star. He's been acting since the 60s, but
yeah,
he found this. What's great about Atkins, though, is he found this niche career as a B horror movie actor. And if you talk to him today, he's still alive, 87 years young. He loves the movies he did in the 80s. He called Night of the Creeps one of the best times he ever had on a movie set. He's not bitter that he didn't make it as a big actor. He talks like glowingly about these movies and says, I love these movies. You know, right. I had fun with them. And to just, he seems just like a really cool dude. I think he's from Pittsburgh. And like, cause he does theater there a lot. Like there's 9 years where he played Scrooge, I think, in a theater production, there.
Damn.
And he just, it's good to see an actor who appreciates what he did and realizes through the conventions that he's gone to, cause he is big on the convention circuit, or he was, right. I'm not sure if he is today. And he sees the love for these movies and he sees what he did. It's kind of like how Jamie Lee Curtis had a late career realization that like, oh crap, those genre films I made early on, there's a major fan base that I've just never noticed because maybe there wasn't as big of a convention circuit where she could see all these, all right. these people.
Right. Yeah.
But Atkins, of course, he started young on the convention circuits. And so he knew, and he's just embraced his career. And, you know, I often say about 80s B horror movies and Tom Atkins, we trust because, and his catchphrase, thrill me from this right. movie. It's kind of becoming a love fest for Atkins, but this is one of the rare times I get to talk about it because I'll watch anything if he's in it. You tell me Tom Atkins is in it, I'm like, all right, I'm there.
Right.
But yeah, it's just a great, great, great B movie. And I wanted to choose something fun, compared to last week. And that's why, like when we were talking last week, I was like, oh, I know which film I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I do. Unlike last week, I do know what I'm going to talk about next week. And we'll, of course, we'll talk about that in the wrap up, but yeah, Night of the Creeps. I love it. You have any more thoughts on it, Jason? Cause that's about all I've got on it.
Great movie. Love it. It, like I say, it's been years since I actually got a chance to sit down and watch it. But yeah, it's definitely one I will revisit from time to time, you know, just because it is so much fun.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, we've talked about our films. We talked about some movie news. I think we did pretty good for this week. You want to go ahead and wrap up with some film ratings?
Sure.
All right. Well, Pearl. We'll start with Pearl, Jason, and this is your pick. So what do you rate Pearl?
I give it 10 out of 10 pitchforks to the face.
Oh, God. Man, that scene. Whew.
Yeah.
I will give it 5 out of 5 axes to various body parts.
Yes.
Yeah, just a fantastic movie to sum it up. It's Ty West. If you love X, you'll love Pearl. Can't wait to see Maxine. I hope he stays. They keep calling this like the third and final part of the trilogy, but he's kind of hinted that like, no, I've got other ideas for this world of Maxine or this world of X as it's kind of called. So I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Night of the Creeps, I give 5 out of 5 thrill me. Rating. It's fun. It's B movie entertainment.
Right.
So yeah, that's my rating for Night of the Creeps.
Night of the Creeps. I have to give it 10 out of 10 gallons of napalm to fuel my flamethrower.
My 1980s yeah. flamethrower, which is just fit in any army surplus.
A common item. You in the 80s, I can remember we used to buy flamethrowers at the fireworks stand, and the fireworks were just quarter sticks of dynamite that we would throw at people. Yeah, you know, this was just common stuff in the 80s.
I remember back in the day when Walmart sold flamethrowers until those commie liberals took them out.
Those sons of bitches.
Jason, do you have a film for next week?
You know, I don't right now, and I'm thinking about it. There's one that I want to do. I'll go ahead and say it tentatively, but I have to make sure that it is.
Could change.
Yeah, it could change. But Ghoulies.
I just watched that for the first time.
Really?
Yeah. And all I knew about that movie was the poster, the famous poster of the toilet with Ghoulie coming out of it. That's all I knew about it. And whoo boy, did that movie give me something I was not expecting.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you choose that, I would be glad to talk about it. If not, we'll talk about whatever you're going to talk about. But I do know what I'm going to talk about. We're going to go to the 1990s. We're going to fast forward a little bit in my world. And we're going to watch 1992's Candyman.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Love that fucking movie.
I love it. And I've got a big old stack. I sent you a photo. I got a big old stack of my horror films sitting here to pick from. And that was the one that was like, ooh, Candyman. That, you know, like I'm kind of trying to jump around in decades since we're kind of free from the whole we're staying in the 70s or 80s. But also I'm trying to kind of jump around, not just with the decades, but also maybe with the tone of movies. Like I chose a more serious movie last week. And then I chose the exact opposite of that this week.
So yeah.
I kind of wanted to get back to something that was more serious, and what better than a gothic horror film from executive producer Clive Barker, starring the immortal Tony Todd. So yes. We're going to talk about Candyman.
Your movie actually inspired my choice for this week, because Ghoulies is just a fun one.
That movie's fucking... let me just put it this way. It went in directions I did not expect it to go in.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I didn't know what it was about. But yeah, and Jesus Christ, I was just reminded of... I was coming home from the store yesterday to... Or the other day. Sorry, not yesterday. The other day, and I was coming home to watch Pearl.
Yeah.
And I got behind this woman... She was swerving all over the place. And I just wanted to be like, honey, when they said 5 o'clock somewhere, they didn't mean in the AM.
Yeah.
Cause she was, whoo, she was sauced.
Loaded out of her gourd there, huh?
Yeah. Then I got home and watched Pearl. So, you know, got to get rid of some of that frustration, some of that anger. But yeah, so Pearl, we, and you know, what's funny is we're not trying to choose a theme. Yeah. For this, it's supposed to be you're choosing a movie, I choose a movie, kind of randomly, and we're having some fun with it because it's easy to fall into themes. But we kind of did. We chose two films directed by people who made movies based on their love of horror films.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I didn't even notice until we were talking about Ty West and all that stuff. I was like, oh shit.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. There's the theme.
Yep.
So anyway, also one thing I'm planning to start doing, but I think I'm going to start doing it next week, is in our Facebook group, the Horrorcast podcast. You can search Horror Bros podcast, and it should pop up on Facebook. Come join us. I may go also not only share the episodes as they come out, but I may go ahead and write full reviews, at least for my movies, and post them exclusively to the group page.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It'll just be deeper dives into what we've been talking about. I think I'm going to start with Candyman next week. But who knows? Maybe I'll do these films. I don't know. I'm kind of debating whether I want to write reviews for these two films because I love them so much. But anyway, that's the only update as far as like group. I'm only on Facebook. I don't have any other social media. Yeah. I have a Twitter account that I don't use. But...
I'm on Instagram.
But we do have a Horror Bros group on Facebook, at least.
We got the Horror Bros on Facebook, group on Facebook. We have, I'm on Instagram under Jason_Johnson Comedy. And so, yeah, you can catch me there, catch us on Facebook, and we'll keep you updated. Are you?
And for those out there who don't know, Jason is a stand-up comedian San Marcos, Texas. I wanted to tell you, like, yeah, if you have any shows you want to plug on the show, yeah.
Well, the 25th, coming up. I can do that. The 25th, I'm going to be at Cap City Comedy Club for Funniest Person in Austin contest. On the 31st, I'll be at Upstage Comedy Club at 7 o'clock show for the Funniest Person in San Antonio contest. And then I'll have some more dates for you here later. I'm booking some shows currently.
If I can randomly bring up a drunk driver that I was driving behind on my way back home to watch a movie, I think you can plug your stand-up comedy here.
Sure.
I think this is a safe place.
Yeah.
To do that. But I mean, you know, I'm proud of you, so I want to hear about it. I mean, heck, just the other day, I didn't respond to. Just the other day, you were a finalist in was it again? Yeah, it's been a minute since I've seen the
post. That's the Funniest Person in Austin one.
That's the Funniest Person in Austin. Okay. Which is just awesome.
Oh that was Funniest Person in San Antonio. I'm sorry.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I also meant to respond to your message the other day. I finally did, but yeah, the Street Fighter video you sent me, they just can't seem to crack a Street Fighter movie. Yet these people who made this parody did. Yeah.
Well, and the funny part is I have thought of, I was thinking about Street Fighter the other day and how bad it was. And I almost think that I want to start a segment in on here where we do tell people why they should avoid a movie that is so bad, even if it's not horror, it is horrific to watch. You know what I'm saying? And that would probably be the first fucking movie I would throw up on that one. It would be like, yeah, Street Fighter. But
I would have my first movie in the chamber, Batman and Robin, like that.
Oh yeah,
just
yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, well, Jason, I gotta tell you, in order to cut down on some of this background noise in my house, I have to turn my fan off.
Yep.
And I live in Shreveport, Louisiana. In this day and age, for those who don't know, I'm burning up.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we need to get off this thing before JT dies of heat stroke and slugs start flying out of his mouth and whatnot like that. But I just want y'all to remember, love each other. Bye.
Later, guys.